Melo, Osito, boom, balance. Not too much. Will we overcome our troubles? Run away from this concrete jungle. By the day, under the moonlight, my people will be alright.
Turn that next light to rise, and I see hope in our eyes. Africa will stand as one. I wish I all see this.
Holy shnikes, it's been a minute. Hey, buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast. We're brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, air hockey, foosball, and a dope porch. It has been a while, friends. Episode 237 of this distinguished podcast, and we're finally back after, you know, our own little bit of our own Gold Cup break. That is, we being myself, Bart Logan. We're also joined by Patrick Murphy. Patrick, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, but my air conditioning doesn't seem to be working, so that could be a problem in the near future.
Oh, that is unfortunate, especially because, guess what? He's the birthday boy. Patrick Murphy's birthday is tomorrow, so everybody make sure to get on Twitter and wish Patrick at Patrick or underscore Murphy or whatever it is a happy birthday, or just make fun of him. You know, I think he'll appreciate either and say, you know, he's a pretty, you know, crap reporter, that kind of stuff. No, we love Patrick. We also love Ralph Schudel. Ralph Schudel's with us. Ralph, how are you?
I'm good, guys. It was I was starting to miss you guys after a while, so I'm glad we're back.
I'm glad we're back too. Also back with us is Alex Stanek. Alex, how are you?
Not too bad, not too bad.
Excellent. And then we've got a guest joining us this week, Nathaniel Marhefka from our sister or brother podcast, The Massive Match Day, and of Massive Report fame. Nathaniel, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. It's my full MR pod debut.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to have you here, and we've got, I feel like we don't have that much, like, to talk about, but a lot to talk about. Among them, a big, massive, friendly victory over Eintracht Frankfurt from last night. Talk about some of the impressive performances maybe from that game, players that you might look at. Greg Berhalter getting maybe a prolonged run during the second half, who made impressions in that 1-0 thrilling victory. We'll take a look at the lay of the land maybe for Crew SC and maybe speculate on some decisions that Greg Berhalter may be making with the roster as the transfer window is wide open. So who might Greg Berhalter be targeting, if anyone, for this Crew SC team? Now, there's some movement with some roster moves earlier this week that we'll recap as well. Then we will talk All-Star Game snubs, perhaps, and maybe preview that upcoming bout with Real Madrid and the MLS's best. And then we will look at this upcoming Saturday's game as Crew gets back in MLS action against the Philadelphia Union. But first of all, look yesterday, the Frankfurt game. I think it was a pretty good performance for Crew SC at any point to see them, you know, see the team get a shutout performance against a mid-table Bundesliga team, but that's still a pretty high level of competition, one of the best leagues in the world. And Patrick, what did you see that you liked from that performance?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to take away from that is that these guys got back out there. You know, mostly guys got about 45 minutes got their legs back after being off for 13 days. You know, everybody looked pretty sharp, I thought, especially the regulars. The guys have been training hard the last several days, but obviously nothing is quite like game experience, game fitness, just kind of getting that back because, you know, they head into, as we'll talk about later, kind of a fast stretch here with two games against Philadelphia in quick succession and then some road travel. So it was good to see them back out there. Obviously, you know, hard to take a ton away from the game. Christian Martinez was the guy that everyone was talking about on social media after he got the assist on a nice little ball from Will Trapp that he turned a defender on and played Ola Kamara in for the one goal of the game. Good to see Nico Ness back out there. He was a guy who has missed some time. And then when he played against Minnesota last week or 2 weeks ago, went off with an ankle injury early. So he's back and healthy, played 45 minutes last night. Ola Kamara looked good. We got to see Kukudamane playing a little bit different role, tucked inside a little bit more than the wide position he's deployed for most of this season since coming over to Columbus, which was interesting to see. I thought he looked pretty good taking players on, and that's a role that he may have to become more comfortable with in the future if he ends up staying with the Crew. So some good performances, a shutout, which is good to see. This team obviously doesn't do that often, but you know, I don't want to take too much away from it here as we head into the final stretch of the MLS season.
Definitely, although you do pick out some of those players, the display from Christian Martinez, and I know he is a player that is popular among Crew fans because he's so young, but also because of the position that he plays, and you look at, you know, those creative attacking positions, that's the sexy thing, what people like to see. But I think they also look at this Crew FC roster and see Frederico Higuain, who at his best is, you know, one of the top attacking players in MLS, but there's a big drop off there after him. And if people were to go down, you could see this team in some trouble. So I think a lot of people hope that Christian Martinez might be able to be that heir apparent, or at least a player that can, you know, blossom in coming off the bench and spelling Pipa Higuain. Do we think that he might be down there at that point? I know Alex is a big fan of Christian Martinez.
Yeah, I am. But I'm not sure I'm willing to say that he's the heir to Higuain yet. He's still a very young kid. I think he's 20 years old. You compare him against a lot of our other rookies, and he's younger than most of our rookies, even though he's in his second season here. So I think he still has a lot of time to grow, and he's going to need to grow in order to reach the first team level that we want him to reach. But it was definitely a very encouraging performance, and I think hopefully he'll be able to get some minutes as the season goes on. He's not going to be a starter. He's not going to be a regular player coming off of the bench, I don't think, but I would like to see him get 10, 20 minutes here and there. One thing that really stood out to me was the determination that he showed during the game. Every time that there was any chance of him getting the ball, he went after it. He was running up and down the pitch, and I like to see that from players, especially in friendlies. I mean, you can see that he really wants to be a starter on this team. He wants to be at least in the discussion to play for this team. And he doesn't seem to be taking it for granted and just cashing a paycheck. So I'm curious to see how the season goes on. Another thing I wanted to touch on was how Mane kind of tucked in, as Patrick talked about. That's something that I think we should see more of as the season goes on. We've had discussions in the past about, you know, how do we shake things up? How do we give a different look to teams? I think having a second striker who's pacey, who can take shots from outside the box, who can run inside the box and finish, that would be something that would present defenses with a different challenge. And I think that's something that hopefully Berhalter will utilize as the season progresses.
One of the knocks that I have against Christian Martinez is I do think he's skilled, but I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on the Martinez bandwagon. And I did notice particularly, I want to say it might have been in the first quarter hour of the match, that he was having an exchange with a Frankfurt defender on the sideline and was kind of going back and forth, and the Frankfurt defender was out muscling him considerably. Now, he did win the ball, I do believe, but you know, it's, I'd like to see him maybe put a little more time in the weight room and try to kind of be able to muscle people out, because he's not going to be able to have a sustainable career with going in and taking, you know, substantially bigger defenders on one-on-one. He's going to have a very shortened career span if he keeps doing that. So he needs to play a little bit smarter and try to stay away from initiating as much contact as possible.
The one thing I have an issue with Christian is that he's come in and, you know, scores in his debut against Philly last year, you know, looked good in that, got some opportunities real late in the season. I think he played 5 games last year. Comes out last night, looks good. But at least from what I've seen in practice, I don't see that player every day. Now, we only get, you know, the ends of practice and stuff like that, but we usually get to see some good competition. And too often, I feel like he's being talked to by the coaching staff about being out of position, you know, not getting to where he needs to be in certain situations, things like that. Stuff that, you know, granted, he's a young kid and he's going to learn. But, you know, Ralph, when you said pump the brakes, I think that's, you know, a good thing. Obviously, in game action, he's looked good. So maybe he's a guy who's just kind of a gamer and, you know, he's going to, you know, bring it. But I think in order to get on the field, he's going to need to show that he can do it in practice day in and day out. And, you know, if he's having some issues in practice, even if it's translating when they get these scrimmages or, you know, periodic MLS minutes, I'm just not sure how many they're going to be. So, you know, I was happy to see him do that. And obviously, I know that he's got a lot of growing to do. I do think that, you know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, because there's a reason he's not seeing the field. And it's not just because Higuain or, you know, some of these other guys are bigger names in front of him. It's that, you know, he's not bringing it, you know, all the time in practice. You know, so I think that's something we should keep in mind. Another thing I wanted to bring up was the 3-man back line. We've now seen that in 2 consecutive games. If we go back to the Minnesota game on July 4th, it's produced 2 shutouts, granted against a depleted Minnesota team and, you know, in a friendly setting. But this is the first time we got to see it in person at Mapfre, which was a change. I think it allowed for kind of a different perspective on it. It's hard to kind of take that in on television. But I do think that this is something you're going to see more of throughout the rest of the season. You know, it changes a little bit the way they play. It does make them better defensively and maybe takes a little bit away from the offense. But I do really like, you know, how that's worked for them. I mean, if you look back at the 4 times they've used it this season, you take about 10 minutes away from the end of that Toronto game, you know, they're holding a shutout. You know, the last several minutes of the Colorado game when things kind of fell apart, they've got a shutout. So defensively, I think it's been pretty good, you know, obviously some lapses and whatnot. But I do think this is something that they've been working on. And Greg Berhalter said after the game last night that, you know, this was a chance to experiment with it a little bit more. We've seen it in more games recently. So I do think that that the 3-man back line is something to keep in mind. And it wouldn't surprise me if that becomes a more regular thing as we progress over the last 14 games of the MLS season.
Well, I'll toss it out to the floor real quick, because you brought up a good point, Murph. You know, if for these MLS minutes that he gets, guys, what do you think? Is he best served coming in, you know, with a half hour to go? Or do you think if you need that injection of pace, you know, is he a 15 or 20 minute kind of guy?
See, I don't even think he's the kind of guy that you bring on if you need to secure a win. I think it would be more about just getting him game time, getting him game experience, and trying to build him up as a player for the future. I'm not sure that he is the player that's going to turn a game around, at least unless you are short on people. I mean, I would much rather be bringing on either Kakuta Mane or Ethan Finley, depending on who's winning that battle. Or even a guy like Hector Jimenez, I think, could contribute going into the later part of a game. So I don't really see him as somebody who's going to be someone you throw on to try to turn a game around. But I do want to see him getting minutes when we've kind of secured the win, or at least we're feeling pretty good about it. Just to try to get his feet wet with MLS and try to keep him kind of getting game experience so that we can build him up as a player for the future.
Do we think that there's more sense in keeping him down in Cincinnati more so than bringing him up to Columbus to get game time? Is his minutes there and his, you know, continued play going to be better for his improvement as a player rather than grabbing a few minutes in Columbus?
I think it would be great if they could find places for him to play. The problem has been finding those minutes, I think. You know, he went to Pittsburgh for a little while. Pittsburgh has some players that play similarly, so, you know, he didn't beat them out, I guess, and there's no, you know, clause in the contract that the two teams signed that the Columbus players have to play. And then when he went to Cincinnati, he played in one game, and then the second time, I believe, he didn't see the field. So, you know, that's you know, kind of discouraging, I guess, even though you are seeing these performances. But, you know, if they could find a club that needs, you know, a guy, you know, close enough that he can travel back and forth like Pittsburgh or Cincinnati, but he could get some minutes, I think that would certainly be beneficial. You know, maybe not playing exactly the way Columbus wants at this point, but, you know, game minutes are only going to help a young player, and I think he could certainly use that.
I know another young player, and Patrick, you kind of touched on this with the talk on the back three that impressed me and has through these past two games, is Lals Abubakar. Put in a strong performance last night, a physical player, but seemed to make, you know, the smart, simple plays, but executed them, which is something that, you know, we haven't necessarily seen a lot of consistency on the back line for in the minutes he was in. And when you see a player who can seems like to me he can distribute the ball pretty well for a player of that size, you know, the center backs that aren't traditionally known for that. And when you look at him, the way he sets up there along with Alex Crenali and then maybe a Nico Nace, you like the way that those three could maybe grow together if the Crew SC were to adopt this back three line system consistently. And if anyone else has other comments.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I like where your head's at on that part with those three. And, you know, I like what Lawless has been doing. And Patrick and I talked about it on the ride down to Cincinnati before the Open Cup game, because that was a chance that it looked like Lawless would potentially actually break through in play in the match. But, you know, he's looked really good against good competition. Albeit, you know, it's been Minnesota, so they were getting starters, and who knows how many of Frankfurt's players actually were going to be, you know, maybe seeing the time and the pitch in the Bundesliga this year. But, you know, he's a player with a lot of really good ability, I think a ton of upside. And it seems that him and Crenali work really nicely together. And, you know, I think when you get a nice guy like Ness who can move around and distribute the ball really decently, in the defensive third, I think it spells nothing but good things for Crew SC.
I think the biggest thing with Lawless is he's always been one of the most athletic guys on the field, you know, coming up through clubs and college and whatnot. And so now it's about, you know, now that you're not the most athletic guy, he's got to learn some of the more technical things to be a defender. And when you're a center back, obviously, you're the last guy before you get into the goalkeeper or one of two, typically. When they go to three in the back, which is where I think he's done his best, he's been able to know that there's another center back, usually Crenali, in behind him. I think he did well in preseason doing that. When they've used that in scrimmage, he's looked better, I thought, than he has when they've played with two center backs. So I think that's kind of a strength for his right now as he continues to develop as an actual defender. You know, I talked to his college coach at Dayton before the season started, and that was one of the things he said was, you know, he's going to work hard and he's going to, you know, be one of the more athletic guys on the field. And, you know, while that's certainly not a knock against him, it's just, you know, why it's taken him so long to get some minutes is, you know, he's learning the MLS game, getting used to the speed, you know, and guys kind of being able to keep up with him and things like that. And, you know, I thought with Frankfurt last night, I think they put out a pretty solid squad to start, granted they're in preseason. And I thought Lawless held his own, you know, battled with the guy on their right side a couple times and, you know, was able to win some balls or, you know, shield some balls out of bounds. So, you know, another good performance, but we're going to need to see it consistently if they're going to go three in the back, because I think you're going to see kind of that setup that they had last night way more often.
You know, and he went up against Timmy Chandler a couple times too last night, which was kind of an intriguing matchup to watch. But a guy I want to give a quick shout out to was Hector Jimenez, who I think this three-back system actually is kind of very beneficial to. He was pretty defensively sound on the right-hand side of the pitch. I can remember a specific situation where he read a pass perfectly and helped escort it out and get Crew SC possession. So I just kind of, before we move on or continue to talk about Lawless, I wanted to make sure we gave Hector some proper shout-outs.
Yeah, I just want to mention Lawless real quick. One thing I has really impressed me with him is he doesn't seem to get flustered like a lot of center backs when they're young seem to. I think even Crenali, to a degree, has this problem where when they're under pressure, sometimes they play a pass too soon, or they don't challenge when they should challenge, or they do challenge when they shouldn't. Lawless seems very composed for his age, and he's not the finished product yet by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got the physicality and he seems to be adopting the kind of technical skills that he needs to adopt at his age to be an MLS defender. I think he has a bright future ahead of him. I think he can be an MLS quality defender for many years to come if he keeps on the path he's on. And I hope that Crew SC will hang on to him, because I think he's one of these draft picks that might actually pan out for us in the future.
Certainly a strong performance from them and for Crew SC. You know, I think especially coming off a break for this team to get the win, I think a good performance, although it wouldn't have been too bad. Wouldn't have minded too much if they found a way to play that game on Monday, so some of the guys that started would be able to have a able to get the full week's rest ahead of the game Saturday against Philly. I know they're, you know, as we mentioned, Hector Jimenez, and they're getting the start in, I believe, for Harrison Offal, who may have been injured. I think he's out of the 18. But it, I think, and Nathaniel's kind of brought it up in our chat that's off the podcast. There are some legitimate questions about Harrison Offal this season, going from one of the top-rated right backs and certainly one of the real drivers of play for this team since his acquisition last year. This year, or his first full season last year, this year, not as much from King Offal. We haven't seen that consistency. He's been lacking in his own third and hasn't provided that dynamic attacking presence as often as you saw last year in the other part of the field. And you question whether, you know, a player like Hector Jimenez with some more strong performances like this might be able to start really pushing Harrison Offal for that starting spot.
Yeah, I totally think that Jimenez might fit in better in this 3-5-man backline system. He seems to be a bit more composed in that type of setup, and his ability to defend and sensibly position himself in transition is a lot better, I think, than Harrison's, and better than Harrison has shown this season, at least. So maybe Harrison becomes, you know, a solid option for the four in the back line. But if Berhalter keeps going with this setup, I think Jimenez might be a safer bet going forward throughout the year, because I feel he's played more consistent.
I think it will be interesting too, you know, seeing how they line up with this 3-5-man back line, because, you know, Hector obviously is a guy there. You know, they used Ethan Finley against Minnesota in kind of more of a 3-4-3 formation, pushed him higher and tried to use the speed of him and Mane to run at the Minnesota back line. You know, so what does that mean for a guy like Harrison? Obviously, he can play the wing back role, but we've talked at length both on this podcast and on the site about his deficiencies defensively. And, you know, if you switch to this three in the back, you obviously want to be better defensively. That seems to be your intent. You know, Hector Jimenez still provides offense, maybe not quite as much as Harrison, but, you know, it's a give and take there that I think is interesting. And it could be that you go back and forth, you know, if you feel like you've got an advantage offensively on the right-hand side and you want to take advantage of it a little bit more, maybe Harrison's the guy for one game and, you know, Hector is a guy when you need a little bit more cover. So, I think there's a lot of things that we still have questions about this three-man back line. How does it affect Higuain? What about Ethan Finley? You know, where does Justin Merrim fit in? Is he going to play in behind a forward? What does that mean for Kakuta Mane? I mean, there's plenty of questions that we don't know just because we've only seen it, you know, a total of five times or something like that.
Well, in that, you know, we look at this and maybe how that three-man back line might work, but we're also in the midst of, we got a lot of questions, and we're in the midst of the transfer window, and we had some news yesterday reported, I believe, maybe first by Andrew Erickson over at the Dispatch, that Crew SC had acquired or re-bought a international spot from DC United, an additional one for $50,000, which I think, fellas, we know can mean only one thing. Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the black and gold jersey. It's happening. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
I hate everyone.
Well, I think this international slot's interesting because, and we talked to Greg about it today, you know, there's a couple ways they could use this because first, you know, and the most obvious that people went to was this is a sign that a signing will be imminent, an international signing. But something to keep in mind is that this team has been over the international roster spots all year. They've had nine, they're only allowed eight. And the way they've kind of handled that is sending players on loan, Christian Martinez, Lalas Abubakar being the main guys. So this could just be a way to get in line with you know, the league rules. And I know you say, well, why do you pay that much to do that? Well, if the league's kind of taken notice of things like this halfway through the season here, maybe made some comments to the team a couple times that, you know, and this is just speculation on my part, but, you know, obviously they found a way to kind of skirt the rules a little bit, which other teams have done with their USL affiliates. So it's really not anything different. But, you know, if they're being told, hey, you got to get this figured out over the second half of the season here, then maybe it was imperative to go out and get this spot for something like that. But they also do have another, you know, just regular roster spot with the departure of Dili Duka. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, there's been rumors about international guys, and we'll touch on that a little more. But, you know, I do think that part of this may be because they need to get in line with league rules a little bit, and this balancing act of sending guys on loan has become stale, so to speak.
I kind of wonder if our discussion about three-man back lines and all that sort of thing will kind of get tossed out the window if we do end up making a move. We've been linked with a right winger as a potential DP, young DP signing, John Murillo, I believe. Benfica winger who can also play at striker. If something like that were to happen, I wonder if the three-man back line just gets kind of tossed aside and we go back to the four-man, kind of traditional Berhalter style, and they just kind of slot Murillo in where Ethan Finley usually plays. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting acquisition in terms of the international spot. It stinks that you have to send a player out on loan and kind of keep doing that rotation, and I could understand why the league would not be a fan of that. A lot of things like that happen in MLS, but it is definitely something that they want to cut down on as kind of the league gains legitimacy and becomes older, frankly. You know, there was the Eddie Gavin rule for a while and a lot of other kind of weird loopholes that teams used. And the USL affiliate situation has led to some teams moving guys back and forth to deal with cap things and roster spots and things like that. But I hope that we're using it for a DP because I do think this team needs something to kind of give it that extra jolt. And I think if we were just using it for Martinez or Abubakar, I don't think that's what is going to take this team to the next level. And I don't think the level that we're at right now is acceptable.
No, I agree with you there on that one, Alex. And I think, I mean, if the league wants to, you know, this is where the league is going to come down and say, oh no, you can't be moving that, when Don Garber will make a rule midway through the season to give LA or New York a new player, I don't think that that's really something, you know, legitimate. Then they're going to come down and be sticklers to the letter of the law on this issue. But, you know, also the point of when they're purchasing this, I mean, it's been that situation with Martinez all the entire season, And I don't think, especially if you're Greg Berhalter, that I think his leash is too short to look at this team, for this team to, you know, be, for him to think it's going to be okay to not make improvements to this team. Because while right now they're in the playoffs, you're going to have other teams that are going to be improving themselves during this window. And you haven't shown, you know, any sort of consistency through the season. Yes, they could go on a 3-win tear and, you know, suddenly they're above that line. But they could also lose three, you know, continue to lose games at the rate they've lost them and find themselves well below. Most teams have games in hand. So, I think they've got to make a move. And I don't understand why you purchase it unless you're going to add that player, especially at this time while the window's open.
And just to clarify, when we asked Greg today, you know, he made it clear that, of course, they're always looking, and you know that, you know, he just didn't want to necessarily say that this was for sure. This move to get the international slot is for sure for that, which, you know, in Greg Berhalter speak, could mean a lot of things, because he likes to skirt around answering, you know, specific questions like that, as I think a lot of head coaches do. In terms of, you know, the signings, I do think it would surprise me if they don't make some sort of move during this window. Obviously they're not content with where they've been. I do think that they think they have talent in order to make a run and, you know, kind of make a push to the playoffs and beyond in these last 14 games. But, you know, with the way things are going, it wouldn't surprise me if they do make some moves, make a move or two. And that could mean players out as well, you know, not necessarily just bringing guys in, obviously, you know, that affects things. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, like I said, if there's something done here in the next couple of weeks while this window is still open.
If the team is to make a move or moves in this offseason, what do you see it being? Is there an area that this team needs to focus on?
I think, we've talked about here the striker position or right wing, either a legitimate second option target man who can hold up play but can also create some offense and take advantage. Striker's got to strike. The idea of Adam John rather than the reality of him, and then that right wing position as well. It looks like Kakutamane might be best served at that left on the left side. You need someone to push Ethan Finley or push him out, because if he's not producing, I don't know, you know, producing statistically on lead, you know, creating goals, whether that's through a pass or through, you know, scoring himself, I don't know how much he really brings you on this team, but for speed. So I think those are the two biggest areas of concern for this team.
One thing to keep in mind too is this team's getting back Nico Hansen, and while he, you know, started hot and kind of fell off a little bit, that hernia issue was bugging him for a while, and that was part of the reason they decided to have the surgery now. He'd miss a few games, have this Gold Cup break to fully recover. He's back in training. From what we saw today, he was full, and I believe he was full over the weekend as well. So, you know, a fully healthy Nico Hansen could look a lot more like the guy we saw against Portland in some of those early games. That could help boost that right wing and push Ethan Finley or even get in there and contribute more, as opposed to the guy over probably the last handful of games that, you know, didn't look himself based on what we saw early on. So that could be an addition that, you know, you don't have to go out and make a move for. You just get a guy, you know, who's come off surgery and is healthy, and, you know, you hope everything goes well, and it sounds like it has. But, something to keep in mind.
You know, one player who has been coming into the season, I think there are some questions about that side of the field being the left, but Justin Miram has raced most of those and really making that position his own. And yet today, earlier today, or might have been yesterday, the MLS All-Star team is announced, and not there, notably Justin Meerum, nor Olaf Kamara, probably Cruessi's best two chances at making the All-Star team, but neither of them on that final roster. No Columbus Crew SC players. I believe four from the Chicago Knee Bridgeview Fire. Fellas, are we, I mean, I don't really care to tune into the All-Star team, All-Star game when Crew players are in there. I do begrudgingly, but now without a Crew player in the lineup, I'm not going to be tuning in. What are you guys thinking on this move?
Colossal waste of time. You know, I don't see realistically how this benefits the league. I'm going to go on a spiel, so I'm going to warn you guys right now. You know, it's just, you can't look, a lot of these guys that got elected, I'm looking at the list right now, it's name recognition. I mean, DeMarcus Beasley, Parkhurst, who I think, you know, he's had a decent year, but, you know, you look at Stephen Fry, who is blah, you know, Tim Howard's been kind of hit or miss. I've understood that, you know, Colorado's defense is fairly good. Bastian Schweinsteiger, I think, deserves it. I'll say he's a good one. But Kaká's done absolutely nothing for Orlando City this year. Bradley's been kind of, you know, he's okay. He's a good distributor. But, you know, you look at somebody like Altidore, who's big, slow, holds up play. You can't have somebody like that against Real Madrid necessarily. Giovinco, who I think is absolutely, he's the FIFA winner for most goals scored on FIFA, but it is a little bit of a crazy thing. But I'm not a fan of the All-Star game. I think we need to change the format. It's a glorified practice for Real Madrid. I saw Real Madrid play last year. You know, they did, you know, they did okay. It was fine, but, you know, it's just, we've got to get back to a format that would make the Major League Soccer All-Star game fun, or better yet, let's just get rid of the All-Star game because it's totally pointless anyway.
A couple things on the All-Star game. First of all, the league's not gonna get rid of it because it's a moneymaker. They're gonna keep having European teams come in because that makes more money. So, you know, we're kind of stuck with this, and, you know, it is what it is. The nice thing, I think, and I believe they still do this, is that they have a kind of a second team that still gets the bonuses of the All-Star games because they had the East versus West. I'm not sure if that changed in the last bargaining agreement, but I believe that's still in play. But I think you have to remember, you know, 11 of these guys were selected by fan voting. And, you know, while there are plenty of fans out there that watch a lot of games and are well-informed about the league, most fans probably know their team and know the big names around the league. You know, Ralph, you mentioned a guy like Kaká. 9 appearances this year. You know, I forget exactly how I have it here. 9 appearances, 3 goals, 4 assists. You mentioned DeMarcus Beasley, who, you know, the Dynamo, while doing well, you know, in terms of standings, are one of the worst defenses in the Western Conference. Not that he's a natural defender, but he plays on defense and is a defender for the All-Star team. You know, you mentioned Parkhurst, a team that was giving up a lot of goals this year. Now, they've been better recently. But again, these are guys that fans are going to recognize. I don't know if I don't have the list here. I don't know if all of those guys are fan votes, but I know Kaká was, and I believe Beasley was as well. So,
they all were, except, you know, for Parkhurst.
Okay. Yeah. What disappointed me about the list, and this is not just from a Crew perspective, is that when, you know, the coach and, you know, Don Garber is obviously looking at it from a league perspective and who will put butts in the seats. And so he's going to pick some guys that have a little bit of name recognition. But when you've got a coach picking guys, you'd think you'd pick some guys that could help you win a game or that deserve to be there based on their performances over the first half of the year. Yet you go with guys like Dom Dwyer and Giovanni Dos Santos, who are both guys who've had pretty subpar years, 5 goals and an assist in 15 games for Dwyer. Dos Santos, 6 goals and an assist in 12 games. And you leave out a guy like Justin Meerum, who's, you know, over the first half of the season having a career year. You know, granted, he's been hurt a little bit recently, so the form's fallen off. He hasn't scored in a while, but, you know, there were talks on MLSsoccer.com about him being the best winger in the league, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, and now he doesn't even make the All-Star team. Like, I don't expect him to necessarily start, but the guy deserves to be recognized as one of the top players in the league with his peers and, you know, things like that. And, you know, if he continues to do well, I hope he gets MLS Best 11 or, you know, something along those lines. But this is a chance to go on national television where the Crew don't get to play very often. and, you know, showcase his ability. And this goes for Ola Kamara and Federico Higuain, who I think were less likely to get a call for that or get selected for this, but I think are both viable candidates with the first half of the season they've had. You know, Higuain and Kamara tied for the team league with 9 goals. Higuain has 5 assists. Kamara has 3 assists, which is more than he had all of last year. You know, these guys are all playing well for, you know, as up and down as the crew have been, this attack has been pretty consistent. You know, whether it's Merrim one game, Higuain for 4 games in a row, Kamara went, you know, picking his points. So, you know, it is disappointing to not see a crew player there. And, you know, not that I wish for injuries to anybody, but if there are, you know, guys that go out, maybe one of these guys does get an opportunity, especially Justin, because I think he's having a pretty impressive year and deserves to be recognized for it.
It's unfortunate to guys like Justin. You all saw his tweet earlier today. The, you know, it may have been different if my name was Marimino, but I think
Justinho,
that was it.
That was great by him, by the way. he's like a quietly solid Twitter follower. Doesn't tweet a lot, but he's got funny. Some good ones out there. Yeah,
but you said it earlier, Pat, at the start that this is a moneymaker for the league, right? And Garber and Paunovic, probably backed by people in the league. I don't know. I can't say. But they look at this partially from a monetary standpoint, and it's the unfortunate reality that Giovanni Dos Santos is going to bring in, you know, a hefty Latino crowd to the match, whereas Justin Merrim will not. Whereas I would say that Justin Merrim deserves to be there before him. I would even say that Alessandrini, Gio Dos Santos' teammate, deserves to be there before him. You know, the list goes on from Valeri to Altidor. You know, these are names that, no, they've not been poor this year. And no, I don't say that they don't deserve it at all, because I think they do. You know, I think all these players are, you know, they are top players in the league and they probably deserve to be there. But I think there are people that deserve to be there more than them, and it's unfortunate.
I agree with you guys. I think that this is a moneymaker. I think that it would make it easier for all MLS fans if they just stopped thinking of it as a merit-based decision and started thinking of it as a monetary decision. This is not the best team in Major League Soccer. This is the best team from a marketing standpoint in Major League Soccer. And that's just the way it is. I would love to see them change the format, but I think if anything, they would just have to add something to it rather than take away the All-Star game or change it. These summer friendlies in the United States are very, very lucrative. There's a reason that every major European team comes over here. If they're not over here, they're going to China. And it's basically one of those two destinations every summer because it's such good money that you can't do anything else. What I would like to see them do for MLS is I've basically given up on them changing the All-Star game. I would like to see them add a skills competition, kind of like the NHL has a skills competition. And you could have a free kick competition. You could have a fastest shot competition. You could have a bunch of other kind of stupid games that you could have where you could bring in players specifically for these things. And that would make it interesting. They used to have that, didn't they? Didn't they used to, if I remember when it was here, one of the years, like they did like goalie wars and like a dribbling competition, and it was all at the stadium, and you could like go down. I remember going one of the years, maybe it was 01 and or 2000 when it was here, and watching that. Like they used to do that, and it was a lot of fun. I remember that one year that I did it, and I don't know if I assume they don't anymore because you never hear about it. But yeah, I think that would be a great idea, Alex.
Yeah, I think they used to have at least a version of that. But I think, you know, throw it up on YouTube. Stream it on YouTube. Stream it on the MLS channel. Or if you can't get it on TV, put it on TV. But, I mean, I know, speaking as a casual fan of hockey, I watch more of the All-Star weekend than I do of anything else. But it's never the All-Star game because I don't care. I watch the skills competitions because they're fun. I prefer the skills competitions in the NBA, the three-point competition, the dunk competition, those things, over the All-Star game in the NBA. I think they're missing out on something that they could throw to actual MLS fans. I do not think the All-Star game is designed for MLS fans. It is designed for your World Cup crowd who want to see the big names from Europe against the big names in Major League Soccer, and you market the league during this time to get those casual fans into whatever local stadium they're trying to market. It's disappointing that Columbus does not have a player that the league feels is marketable. But again, it's just the way it is. And I hope that they would just add something else so that maybe we could get Federico Higuain there for the free kick competition. Maybe we could get Merrim there for the free kick competition. Maybe we could get, you know, Merrim there for the dribbling competition. Who knows? Something to throw a bone to these fans. You don't have to make it a one-day thing. You can split it up into 2 days. You can have the skills competition be the night before. I think that would be a better solution. That way you can get somebody from every team there, and we're not left feeling like we're not really a Major League Soccer team because we're not in the All-Star game. We feel like we don't have good players when really it's a marketing thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you it doesn't have to be, you know, we can only market the league and only, you know, market to an international audience and not to MLS. Like every other major sport in North America seems to find a little bit of a middle ground and be like, well, we're at least going to throw, you know, a bone to each team where you've got one player from each team represented or something in there. And in MLS, we've got four players from the Chicago Fire, three players from Toronto, three players from Atlanta, three players from Dallas. You know, I don't think an international audience is tuning in. It's like, oh, well, Matt Hedges has got this, is there. Well, now I'm going to tune in. I understand that, you know, cynical play there from the league and from Don Garber. I wouldn't expect anything else from it, but it's you don't have to. I mean, it's not just from a Crew fan standpoint. You know, there are other teams that don't have a player in there and other fan bases that are, you know, not having a player. And you're really alienating your fan bases, I think, when you're excluding them, like, a new fan base, maybe like Minnesota or, you know, New England, and they're basically, you're saying, we don't care if you tune in or you're part of the All-Star weekend, which is supposed to be, you know, a fairly big thing for the season, for the league.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean that they were marketing to international fans so much as fans here in the United States that are not regular Major League Soccer watchers, regular Major League Soccer attendees. And from that standpoint, I think the argument that Major League Soccer would make is that they're the people that when the Crew say, hey, come out to Crew Stadium, David Beckham's in town, or hey, come out to Moffray Stadium, Kaká is in town. The fans that see that and then decide, hey, I'll go to that game. I want to see David Beckham, or I want to see Kaká. Those fans are the ones that they're trying to market to with this All-Star game. So it doesn't even matter that Crew players aren't there because they're going to want to go see Giovanni Dos Santos instead of the Crew anyway. Whether that turns out to be the case or not, I don't know. But I think that's kind of the direction they've been taking the All-Star game in recent years. It's not the best players in the league against a good team from Europe. The team in Europe is a bunch of, you know, reserve players and youth players anyway. I mean, it's not like it's a full strength squad that they're throwing out there in a competitive match. It's a total joke international friendly. So I would rather see them just market it as what it is, as this fun thing, and we're going to throw a bunch of other fun things in there, but they need to stop acting like it's, oh, this is the best in America versus the best in Europe, and let's see who's going to come out on top. Well, if it was Manchester United or Real Madrid or whoever in a competitive match against the best players in Major League Soccer, they would destroy us. And that's just the way it is. So they do this fun thing, but I think they should change it. I think it needs to be changed. Every team needs to be involved. And because you can't do that with the roster, I think you need to have some sort of other event.
And I like that. And a couple things you guys were saying with just about everything is, number one, I think we need to lose the All-Star game title. I don't know. Maybe call it the MLS, like, summer friendly or midseason. I don't know. Call it something else. But to the skills competition point, you know, even, I don't know how they can do it, you know, with the way that, you know, companies now are presenting and packaging different sporting events. I can guarantee anybody watching Major League Soccer on a regular basis probably plays FIFA. So what if they get marketed up with, you know, EA Sports and do maybe like the FIFA Skills Challenge that you do during like a loading screen or something? They did like a weird YouTube series on it the year that Kai went to Commerce City when they had the All-Star game out in Colorado. But, you know, it's what if they do something like that or market it and then, you know, maybe stream it on Watch ESPN or stream it on Twitch or do something like that.
I love that idea.
Yeah, I mean, like, what if they get something like that going and, you know, you could get it marketed to so many different segments and you can hit it with, you know, four different types of segments, cast this big net out, and maybe you can get people to watch it. Now, to get back to it and put the finishing point on it, because, you know, I'm sick of the All-Star game, and I'm not going to watch it necessarily, but, you know, I can't get excited about it because, you know, I'm looking at players like Dom Dwyer who are in with like five goals in, what did we say? Hold on, I'm going through my notes again here. But, you know, he's got five goals and one assist this year. And players like Maxi Arruti are getting totally ignored who are just having absolute fantastic years for FC Dallas. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't like the roster personally. And I know Nathaniel wanted to talk about it. This defense against Real Madrid's reserves, I mean, I'm praying for him. Good luck, guys.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke. And, you know, a big part of it is the names that are in there. You know, DeMarcus Beasley is not the best left back in the league anymore at this point in his career. He's 36 years old, and simply he's a name, and that's why people chose him, obviously. But, you know, the rest of the squad with, you know, the names of Parkhurst and Van Damme, Kapelhoff, while some of them, you know, other good players, I don't think they've even performed that well this year. So again, it goes back to that name question. But I think, I don't know, this defense, this will be interesting to see how they handle it. I don't know what Real is going to bring. I'm not one really for the All-Star game, but we bring in these star-studded attackers, and it seemed like the defenders were kind of left forgot.
Well, and I think, too, going on the defensive thing, how did they pick these goalies? I mean, obviously Tim Howard was picked by the fan vote, so I guess I answered my own question. But, you know, to pick Stefan Fry, who's been on a struggling Seattle team defensively, just shows no awareness of what's gone on in the league. I mean, there's so many better defenders, so many better goalkeepers. I just, you know, that one blew my mind more than the Crew SC guys not being there. It was like, you know, what's Kansas City's goalie's name?
Tim Melia.
Yeah. Like he's obviously been the best keeper. I mean, he has a good defense in front of him. Don't get me wrong, but you just look at his stats, that guy deserves to be there. And so, you know, I don't want it to sound like we're just hating on the fact that Columbus guys aren't there, because that's certainly not the case. You know, and I do think there's some teams that have, you know, Chicago's been one of the best teams in the league this year, arguably the best team. I think statistically they're the best team right now. So, they, you know, it makes sense that they have more guys. But, you know, maybe, you know, because I don't think they're going to get rid of it. I don't think they're going to change as an all-star game. But, you know, maybe change a rule kind of like I think the MLB does it, where every team gets a representative. You know, you've got 23 guys, I think. You could have one from each team. I mean, even on teams that are having really bad seasons, I think there's probably one guy that you could pick. And you're going to have some years where a guy gets left out because of that, but at least then you have interest from every fan base to try and tune in. So, you know, it might dilute the game if you want to talk that way, but, you know, I think it would at least bring in some interest from each of the fan bases, as opposed to now where, you know, you guys are saying, you know, I don't really care about it, I'm not going to watch it. And is that really what MLS wants? I think they'd want their fans, both, you know, the casual fan that only watches the World Cup and the, you know, MLS fan to tune in regardless of, you know, who's there.
I mean, again, it was going to be a long shot for me regardless, just because I've got just such a deep, deep-seated dislike of anything that, you know, makes Don Garber happy. So I wanted to see that. But, I mean, yeah, again, Justin Meerum, he didn't even get – he got snubbed from the MLS snubs list. Like, they didn't even – there are lots of good players that had, you know, should have been on – this roster. If you want to actually want this to be something representative teams, you can get other players involved. They did not. Of course, some players that are out, we've got the Gold Cup going on. We're going to get a quick recap here for those USA fans, and if you're fans of other countries in the CONCACAF, from Alex Stanek. Alex, USA winning the group with after that game against Martinique that they, you know, could well have lost in game two of the group stage. It was anything but a sure thing, but after, and then a tie in the first one, but USA coming back to win the group in advance.
Yeah, they move on, and Arena has made the six changes that he's allowed to make between the group stage and the knockout stages. And so he's bringing in a much stronger squad for the knockout games. He called up Tim Howard, goalkeeper, Jesse Gonzalez, goalkeeper, Bradley, Nagby, Altidor, and Dempsey. And he replaced Guzan, Johnson, Bedoya, Christian Roldan, Kalen Rowe, and Dom Dwyer. And so it's basically a full-strength U.S. national team squad at this point. And they are saying that they are going to try to win it. They always try to win the Gold Cup. We usually make it to the final, although we didn't last time, I believe. I think we lost to Jamaica, maybe. I can't remember. That might have been two cycles ago, but I think it was last cycle. And so, yeah, the knockout stages will start tomorrow, I think. Is that correct? Anybody know? I think it's tomorrow.
That sounds right.
Yeah, tomorrow's the first game. It's the quarterfinal in Philadelphia. And so, yeah, I mean, that'll be good. Hopefully the U.S. do well. But I am glad that the Gold Cup break is over. It sucked. I missed you guys. I missed sitting in here and making Falcao jokes. But, yeah, now we can see if we can win the thing.
I thought, well, a couple things. First, I'd like to point out that the U.S., the big win to win the group was in Cleveland. So, you know, winning for Cleveland doesn't happen a lot. But I thought the changes made were... I thought the changes that Bruce made were interesting. You know, obviously it shows a eagerness to win the tournament, but you know, a guy like Dom Dwyer, if I'm him, with you know, scoring against Ghana, scoring in the first game, I would have thought that I would get a run, you know, a chance to kind of prove myself the rest of this tournament. And you know, now he's headed home. You know, obviously Josie's a proven guy and will probably help the team a little bit more, but you know, I thought that this would be a tournament to kind of see these other guys, and you know, with Bruce not necessarily needing to secure his job or anything, as he's kind of here on a short-term basis. You know, I'm a little surprised with some of the guys they brought back, or at least some of the guys they let go. And I guess if you're going to bring guys in, you've got to let guys go. But you know, it could have been an opportunity for other guys. I also thought it was interesting that Guzan was sent back. I'm not sure what that says about what they thought of his performance, given that he's been the starter in these games. Obviously wasn't going to start with Tim Howard and is debuting with Atlanta here shortly, but
I think Atlanta just wants him.
Yeah, and that could be, but you know, just some interesting moves I thought to kind of change up the team at this point.
Yeah, I kind of feel for Dom and the other guys that have been dropped, you know, for maybe the more experienced U.S. men's national team players. You know, the Gold Cup, I view it as I view the Confederations Cup, and a lot of countries see it this way, that, you know, this is a type of tournament where you like to evaluate those fringe players. Evaluate guys like Dom Dwyer. Say, all right, World Cup's coming up. Does he make that cut, right? Sure, we're not quite to that point of cuts yet, but and he will probably be in the consideration for it. But I think this should be part of the evaluating process. And with Bruce bringing in, you know, these kind of star U.S. players, I think it's him taking away from that a little bit. Whereas you see teams like Mexico with their B and C squad out there. So, you know, does the U.S. go to the final and play against Mexico's BC team? And, you know, what do you take from it? I'm not sure. You know, you want to see the U.S. win, but I want to see these guys that are kind of on the edge, that are in development, be evaluated and have their time.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, too, but, like, sometimes this tournament leads to qualification for various other things, but I don't think this one has any prize beyond winning the Gold Cup, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so interesting to do that. I mean, you know, I do see Bruce wanting to get the World Cup team, the guys that he knows, you know, get some more time, I guess, but playing under his system. But, you know, yeah, like you said, Nathaniel, I think you feel for some of those guys, you know, Kellen Rowe and people like that, that are, you know, trying to make their name at that level.
Well, back in MLS, we finally have the crew playing an MLS game after this Gold Cup break this Saturday against Philadelphia. A chance for Columbus, you know, didn't quite finish that three-game stretch the way we wanted to see them heading into the Gold Cup break, but a home game on Saturday against a team that has struggled for most of the year. Philadelphia is 6-7-5 on the campaign, just one win on the road, but a better goal differential than Crew, and I think the only team I believe below the red line that has a positive goal differential at +4 on the season, and they do have a couple of games in hand against the Black and Gold. So it should be an interesting and important game. I mean, all these games really in this final stretch now, I think, are magnified in importance for Columbus because they've got those games in hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of folks put a lot of emphasis on this games in hand. And I mean, if Crew SC do slip up at all or anything like that, I mean, they sure have teams biting at their heels trying to crack the top six in the East. And I think, you know, Philly's not going to be a gimme necessarily. I know that they have Pontius, I believe, is still out on Gold Cup duty. And so is Andre Blake for Jamaica. But their goalkeeper, I believe it's John McCarthy. I'm not too sure his first name, but he had a pretty wicked game last week. But of note, it should be a little bit interesting because Philadelphia plays Montreal tomorrow in a midweek match, so it'll be interesting to see what type of squad that Jim Curtin decides to roll out for the Union and then who he actually ends up bringing to Columbus on Saturday.
Is anybody else worried about this game? Because this matchup against Philadelphia does worry me.
I think, you know, Bart mentioned that they struggled early in the year, but this team has rounded into form a little bit. You know, Alex, I think you pointed it out, unbeaten in three games, four if you count the Open Cup. So, you know, starting to find its form, and you, I guess coming out of a Gold Cup break, it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain that. You know, Ralph mentioned the game on Wednesday, which may tire them out. You know, they have to travel to Montreal so before they come to Columbus. So, you know, I'm not as concerned as if both teams were coming in fresh, especially if, you know, both teams had just played last week and whatnot. But, you know, they do immediately go to Philly right after that. And I think that game is certainly concerning because we know how Columbus has done on the road so far this year.
Oh, Scari, go ahead.
Well, you mentioned how Philly has improved recently in the season, and I think a big part of it has been their defense and Andre Blake being a big part of that. He's been really impressive this year in net for a defense that I don't think has been terribly impressive personnel-wise, but as a unit, they've done pretty well. And this team, they don't play what we call very direct defensively. I read this really neat article on StatBomb just a few days ago, and it talked about projecting goals in a match for both teams based on direct versus indirect offenses and attacks. And I think taking that analysis and applying it to Philadelphia from the perspective of Crew SC, and it does not look good for Crew SC in this one because Philly plays, you know, very indirect defensively. They don't let up a lot of chances. They don't let up a lot of goals. Their goals against is 21 so far this season. And in the East, only Chicago and Toronto have less than that. And if we look at how Columbus has performed against these other teams that have, you know, stronger defenses, Columbus has not performed well and their offense has struggled. So I really worry about Columbus's offensive production against Philadelphia in this two-game stretch.
You guys had mentioned that midweek game for Philly, and I actually wish that we were the team that had the midweek game. Philly having the midweek game actually worries me more than if they didn't, because you're coming off of this break. Players are going to be a little bit rusty mentally and physically, and it's just going to take teams a while to kind of get back into the swing of things. And Philly having that game to kind of get back into the run of things, I think, is beneficial for their team. I have never been one of these people who thinks, you know, two games in a week, you're gonna tire out. Unless you're 35 years old, I don't think it's going to be a problem. So I fully expect Philly to be slightly sharper than we are, and that could give them the edge. But yeah, when you look at points per game, although Philly does have games in hand, they're still behind us in points per game. But like I sent in the chat, and Patrick said, they're unbeaten in the last three Major League Soccer matches, and they're unbeaten in the last four if you count U.S. Open Cup. So they're going to be a tough team to break down, and if we're coming off of this break, maybe we're going to have a defensive lapse here and there that we maybe wouldn't have otherwise. It could be a tough match.
It's certainly going to be an interesting one for the team. We finally see them, and one that I think you've got to look to also hopefully set a tone for the rest of this half for this team to finish out the season well. We're going to get some picks in, our fellows, so start thinking about your picks. But first, I want to quick give a shout-out to our good buddies, our sponsors at the Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street with a dope porch, as pointed out by Alex Stanek. Fellows, let's see, we'll save Nathaniel for last because he's, you know, our new friend here just getting acclimated. So we'll head straight over to Patrick Murphy. Murph, what happened Saturday?
I do agree with Alex in the sense that I think this team could be a little rusty. I think it was good that they got to play on Monday, even if most guys only saw 45 minutes and, you know, the Frederick Guglians and Justin Merrims, Ethan Finley's. I guess Ethan played, but those guys didn't see much time, if any. So I think it may take a little bit for them to get in, but I like Columbus at home. I've kind of stuck with them at home all season. So I'll go 2-1 for the Crew.
All right, 2-1 from Patrick Murphy. Ralph, what are you thinking?
First prediction, Patrick Murphy's going to have a rocking birthday tomorrow, so happy birthday, Murph.
Oh, another thing, this team tends to win on the game right around my birthday. I don't know why it is. It just tends to happen.
Heck yeah. So on that note, though, thanks, man. I'm going to go 1-1 tie at home. I think it's going to be a gritty affair.
1-1. Alex Stanek, what you got?
Oh, I had my mic muted. Sorry,
there
guys.
There you go.
Sorry, guys.
That is promising.
I'm a little bit rusty, too, as you can tell from this break.
We're all coming back from vacation. It's okay, guys. Ralph, you're going to edit all this out anyway, right?
Should we? Are there podcasting friendlies? Like, can we have, like, a friendly podcast against, like, Aces Radio or something like that?
This isn't Nathaniel's friendly for match day later this week.
we got it, and so we can, you know, attract a lot of match day listeners, like, you know, with the MLS All-Star Game, to get all those international crowds.
We should do a podcast where we just record as we're all watching the MLS All-Star Game,
and just release a two-hour
podcast.
Or just do it, and we're talking about whatever we're watching instead of the All-Star Game.
Yeah. You're like, oh man, this Game of Thrones episode is crazy.
Bachelorette's going on right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
It might be. 2-2 is my prediction. I think that we're going to be on fire from the offensive side, and we're going to be rusty on the defensive side. And I think it's going to hurt us, but I think we'll get them when we go to Philly.
All right. 2-2. Nathaniel, what you got?
I'm kind of sticking with what I said earlier, and I think that this Columbus attack is going to struggle against the Philly defense. It is at home, though, so the advantage goes to Crew, but I think Crew goes 1-1 in this one.
All right. Not a lot of confidence in the black and gold, with the exception for Patrick Murphy, although everyone's got Crew getting a point. Yours truly, a 3-0 win for Columbus, because you're going to have just an angry Justin Meerum, angry Ola Kamar, angry Apipa Higuain, who are out to prove Don Garber is incredibly wrong on the MLS All-Star Game and in most things in general. And then the back three continues to just be dominant and, cleans up shop against the Philly team that, again, they've got Bimbo on the front of their jerseys. It's just really hard to take them seriously.
There were some muted laughs there, but
So you guys need to unmute for those. So the people at home listening know I'm as funny as I am.
Well, see, I think what you're going to have is a lot of people sitting in their car laughing, and then somebody's going to rear-end somebody while they're laughing at that joke, and then we're going to have to pay for it.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
I wasn't joking about anything.
You're such a bimbo.
This episode brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Can't wait. It should be Moffray, but Progressive showed us more money, but that's cool.
All right, fellas, any parting shots?
Congratulations to the Columbus Eagles, who I have the privilege of covering this season. Best franchise finish ever, and they are building towards a 2018 season campaign. If you'd like to sponsor them, get in touch with me.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah, ladies. Well, thank you again to Nathaniel for joining us this afternoon. Happy birthday to Patrick Murphy and to the rest of you guys. Bye, buddies.